This is VOA News by remote. I'm Tom Neal. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin on his first visit to Afghanistan as Pentagon chief said Sunday that the Biden administration wants to see a responsible end to America's longest war, but the level of violence must decrease for fruitful diplomacy to have chosen a chance. With questions swirling about how long U.S. troops will remain in the country, he said that in terms of an end date or setting a specific date for withdrawal, that's the domain of his boss. He was referring to the president. He said his stop in Kabul, the capital, where he met with military commanders and senior Afghan government officials, including President Ashraf Ghani, was intended to let him listen and learn and inform my participation in reviewing the future of the American force. Iran has made threats against Fort McNair, an army post in the U.S. Capitol, and against the Army's Vice Chief of Staff. That's according to two senior intelligence officials. They said that communication intercepted by the National Security Agency in January showed that Iran's Revolutionary Guard discussed mounting USS Cole-style attacks against the Army post, referring to the October 2000 suicide attack in which a small boat pulled up alongside the Navy destroyer in Yemen and exploded, killing 17 soldiers. The intelligence also revealed threats to kill the General Joseph M. Martin and plans to infiltrate and surveil the installation. This is VOA News. The Mexican banks of the river dawned Sunday with the heavy presence of immigration agents in place to enforce Mexico's new limits on all but essential travel at its shared border with Guatemala. Dozens of immigration agents lined the riverside against those who landed on the giant intertube rafts that carry most of the cross-border traffic for documentation and turning many back. But those turned away were not immigrants. They were the small-time Guatemalan merchants and residents from across the river who buy in bulk in Mexico to resell in Guatemala or purchase household items when the exchange rate favors it. Healthcare workers have marched through Myanmar's second biggest city, kicking off another day of countrywide protest against last month's coup. Elsewhere, police have used violence against protesters, and security forces have shot dead at least one person. About 100 doctors, nurses, medical students, and pharmacists wearing the long white coats lined up Sunday on a main road in Mandalay to chant slogans and voice their opposition to the February 1st coup that toppled the elected civilian government of Aung San Suu Kyi. The Biden administration now is scrambling to manage a growing humanitarian and political challenge at the U.S.-Mexico border. We get more from AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas says President Biden inherited an untenable situation from President Trump.
We are rebuilding the system as we address the needs of vulnerable children who arrive at our borders.
But on ABC's This Week, he adds,
we know how to address it. We have a plan.
I haven't seen a plan.
Republicans are skeptical. Congressman Michael McCaul, also on ABC's This Week.
They have created a humanitarian crisis down here.
McCaul's forecast.
It's going to get a lot worse. Springtime, summer, more and more come over. The message is coming back that, hey, we got a new president. Come on in.
Ben Thomas, Washington.
And Australian authorities are now planning to evacuate thousands more people on Monday from flood-affected suburbs in Sydney's west, which is set for its worst flooding in 60 years. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Monday, March 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote counting has begun in Sunday's Congo-Brazzaville presidential election.
I know that with the party in power here, it cannot have free and fair election at all, because they cannot win a free and fair election. So for them to win, would put forward the rigging election.
Somalia's government agrees to hold long-delayed elections following U.S. call. We'll have a report on Cameroon's aging leaders. Sunday was the International Day to Eliminate Racial Discrimination, and Tanzania is paying final respect to its fallen leader, John Magufuli.
In Dar es Salaam, 2 days to pay final respect of the late President John Pombe Magufuli completed today. At this time, the body has been flown to Dodoma, where tomorrow is the national funeral services.
And the impact of climate change on water-related disasters on this International Water Day today, Monday. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Has begun in Sunday's Congo-Brazzaville presidential election, where President Denis Sassou Nguesso, in power for 36 years, is expected to win re-election. Reuters news agency reports that UN and European Union observers were not invited to monitor the election, and Catholic Church observers were also not allowed to monitor the vote. The opposition says Congolese want change, but that Sunday's election was a mere window dressing because there has never been a free and fair election in Congo under President Nguesso. Main opposition candidate Guy Brice Parfait-Kolela fell sick on election day Sunday and was airlifted to France. His spokesperson, Sir Roderick Mayanda, tells me the opposition leader contracted COVID-19.
He was sick, but we were thinking that it was only flu and malaria. And during the campaign, he went to Owondo in the north of Congo, where he was due to campaign. And arriving in Owondo, he got very, very, very sick. So we decided him to come back in Brazzaville. And when he came to Brazzaville, we called a doctor to look at him and to see what was going on, and found out that after testing him, he was having also the COVID-19. That's why you didn't see him in the last meeting in Brazzaville when he was supposed to end his campaign in Brazzaville. He was not there because he was due to go to the hospital.
The election went on Sunday without your candidate. Do you think the election will be free and fair?
I know that with the party in power here, it cannot have free and fair election at all, because they don't like free and fair election. They cannot win a free and fair election. So for them to win, it put forward and rigging election. And since I'm in Congo, it is my first time to see a chaotic election, chaotic election. You can find some polling stations after 3 a.m., they were not open. Many, many polling stations at 3 p.m., they were not open. You have a lot of polling stations that were not registered. They were not legal polling stations. So I cannot say that there was free and fair election today.
President Denis Sassou Nguesso said that he believes that the people of Congo-Brazzaville are mobilized and they are ready to participate in the electoral process. What do you make of that?
Yes, the Congolese people want change. They want to change because they are tired of Mr. Denis Sassou Nguesso, who in more than 30 years, they are tired. But they are not trusting the electoral process. But they were very mobilized to vote and to cast their vote so that Mr. Sassou can get out of the power, because they are very, very, very tired.
Now, we hear that the internet in the Congo has been cut off. Is that true?
Yes, yes, exactly. Like in 2016, in 2021 also, since this morning, early in the morning at 1 or 2 a.m., the internet was cut off. Since now, you cannot use internet.
Now, back to the health of your candidate. How is he doing? What is his health condition now?
Since yesterday, the condition was more stable, so that we can say that the condition was better than the one we saw on Friday.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to talk with you, and we wish your candidate well.
Thank you very much.
CL Roderick Mayanda is the spokesperson for the main opposition presidential candidate in Congo Brazzaville. You're speaking with us from Brazzaville. Somalia's government says it is making a commitment to conduct delayed presidential and parliamentary elections after the U.S. urged the leadership to hold transparent elections. On Friday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said leaders should set aside narrow political objectives and uphold their responsibilities to the people of Somalia. Mohamed Kahaye has details from Mogadishu.
Somalia's Minister of Information, Osman Dibe, confirmed the announcement about the elections after U.S. called for leaders to end disagreements among the political class and move forward with the democratic process. Dube says the federal government of Somalia is ready to conduct the elections as quickly as possible, according to the September 17, 2020 agreement approved by the two houses of parliament. The minister added that the outcome of the Technical Committee on Elections on February 16th will soon be put in place. President Mohamed Abdullahi, popularly known as Farmajo, whose term in office expired on February, convened a two-day election summit between the leadership of the federal government and the regional state leaders. The National Salvation Council, an opposition coalition, said the president has no constitutional mandate to convene such a meeting, but called for a summit where all concerned political stakeholders are represented. The leader of Somalia's semi-autonomous region of Puntland, Said Abdullahi Deni, who is a key member of the National Salvation Council, called on Somali citizens to unite in order to prevent setbacks. Deni said the country is at crossroads and Somali people need to unite in safeguarding the progress made in the past two decades. The basis of the National Salvation Council is to respond to the ongoing political situation in the country, Deni said. A UN statement on Sunday appealed to Somali leaders to seize the opportunity for peaceful political settlement leading to elections. The statement by the UN office in Somalia further called on leaders to find a common ground in the interest of the country and its people. Mohamed Kaye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
There have been mixed reactions in Cameroon to 88-year-old President Paul Biya's orders that his party-dominated upper and lower houses of parliament should re-elect officials who are over 80 years old to top positions. According to Cameroon's constitution, the 87-year-old president of the Senate, the upper house of parliament, would take over and organize elections if Paul Biya dies. Moki Edwin Kizeka reports from Yaoundé.
Members of the National Assembly, the lower house of Cameroon's parliament, Wednesday applauded as Kavai Yege Jibril was re-elected speaker. The 81-year-old Kavai says he appreciates President Paul Biya's making his re-election possible.
My profound gratitude.
Jibril says he is highly indebted to Biya for asking his ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, or CPDM, lawmakers to retain him in his position. He says he will always respect Biya. Jibril has been National Assembly Speaker for 30 years. Many Cameroonians expected he would be replaced by a younger lawmaker. However, Biya summoned the 152 CPDM lawmakers together for an emergency meeting. CPDM Secretary General Jean Kwete said Biya asked them to re-elect Jibril. Emmanuel Banmi, a CPDM lawmaker from the English-speaking Northwest region, says they obeyed instructions from their party hierarchy.
Kavayege Jibril is doing his work. I want to commend his devotedness. We know we have difficulties. We have concerns of security. We need to move ahead. Let the government work hand in hand with the representative of the people to see that the security issues is collectively addressed with the collaboration of the population.
26-year-old Ngenan Cosmas, member of Cameroon's National Youth Council, an independent state body that discusses issues related to the well-being of youths, says octogenarians are keeping young people from leadership positions in Cameroon.
How can we elect people at the head of the legislature who could barely walk? The president of the Senate, Masenya Gifenji, would barely walk to the hall. Same goes for the president of the National Assembly. Where are we heading to? It beats my imagination why the same people have been ruling. It is not good. They should leave the younger generation to show what they are capable of doing.
If Bia dies, resigns, or is incapacitated, Gifenji would take power, although elections must be organized to elect a new president in 20 to 120 days. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, March 22nd. The people of Tanzania continue to pay their final respects to their late President John Magufuli, who passed away Wednesday last week. Residents of Dar es Salaam said their final goodbye on Sunday at the Uhuru Stadium, where the late president lies in state. Magufuli will be laid to rest this Friday, March 26, in his hometown of Chato. New President Samia Suluhu Hassan has announced a 21-day mourning period. Magufuli's body will be flown to the capital Dodoma today, Monday. On the road to Dodoma is VOA Swahili language reporter Eid Uwesu. He tells me that diplomats and international organizations accredited to Tanzania will be paying their final respects in Dodoma today, Monday.
Chato is where burial will be done on the Friday of 27th. So we are on our way to go there so that we can have a full coverage of the funeral coverage of the late President Dr. John Pombe Magufuli.
Also, over the weekend was very busy, the inauguration. What can you tell us about the inauguration of the new president?
The Vice President Samia Suluhu Hassan sworn in last week to take the office, and we talked to people. Everybody was happy and seems to have a new hope. She's the new incoming president. She's the first woman president in Tanzania. So it looks like everyone goes to host and expecting a lot from her.
Exactly so. And then there was a funeral service for the late President Magufuli in Dar es Salaam. What can you tell us?
In Dar es Salaam, 2 days to pay final respect of the late President John Pombe Magufuli completed today. It started yesterday, where government officials attended and have a chance to pay their last respect. And today, the people, normal citizens, had a chance also to pay their last respect. And now, at this time, the body of John Pombe Magufuli has been flown to Dodoma, where tomorrow is the expected national funeral services, where international organizations, representatives, or other heads are expected to attend to those funeral services. And it will be done in the capital city of Dodoma.
During the memorial service in Dar es Salaam, we understand there were people did not believe that their president was dead until they could see the casket. Can you describe the scene for us?
Yeah, as you know, before the news of the death of John Magufuli, some government officials denied that he was hospitalized. And then suddenly, vice president by then, who is the president at the moment, she came out and pronounced the death of John Magufuli. So it was like a shock news to the most of the citizens here in Tanzania. And as people had a chance to see his body or to pay the last respect, is when they believe that really Magufuli has gone. So it was a shock day, very sad moment. People were everybody was crying, so it was a very long and sad day in Dar es Salaam to most of the citizens.
That was VOA's Swahili language reporter Ed Uwesu speaking with us on the road to Dodoma. Yesterday, Sunday, was the International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, Human Rights Watch says state institutions have not protected the people of African descent in many countries across the world.
The International Day for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination is observed annually on 21st March, the day the police in Sharpeville, South Africa, opened fire and killed 69 people at a peaceful demonstration against apartheid in 1960. According to the United Nations, the racial activism has been remarkable in the context of COVID-19 pandemic as the virus began to spread in early 2020. A parallel pandemic was unleashed, that of hatred, violence, and fear against certain ethnicities and nationalities. South African Human Rights Watch Director Dewa Mavinga said that state institutions in certain countries have failed to protect the rights of most Africans.
State institutions have failed to adequately protect and guarantee the rights of African citizens. And one area where this has been particularly clear has been the xenophobic violence in South Africa, which has been a problem for many years, and we have seen so many cases, including killings of mostly foreigners of African descent without any accountability.
The United Nations says racist laws and practices have been abolished in many countries. Mr. Mavinga, however, said that there is more to be done to eliminate racial discrimination.
Incidences of racism and discrimination within particularly police institutions, like in the United States, you know, the attacks on black people there, the recent attacks on people of Asian descent, are all indicators that perhaps there is much more that remains to be done. Same applies to racism on the African continent and discrimination and elsewhere. But I think what's important is to have robust laws that are fully implemented.
Many individuals, communities, and societies suffer from the injustice and stigma that racism brings. Amnesty International Kenya Executive Director Irungu Houghton says most refugees are as well subjected to discrimination as they seek asylum.
We have to look at the issue of refugees from a racial perspective. Much of the violence, much of the indignity, much of the instability that we still see in the world is visited on people of color. Refugees seek an identity, they seek citizenship and the full rights and freedoms that comes with being a citizen. They also seek the security of a state and freedom from violence.
Irungu says with the COVID-19 pandemic, already there is inequality even on vaccine distribution.
We have learned that actually COVID-19 patients matter. Vaccine inequality is extremely worrying in this particular period. Something like 53% of the most promising vaccines will not find their way into Africa because they are controlled by 14% of the world's population. Now, why is this a racial issue? It is because that it is those countries that are largely populated by people of color that will be denied access to life-saving medicine in this period.
The United Nations say with the COVID-19 pandemic, it has become clear that inequity is sometimes rooted in racism had subjected minorities to a significantly higher risk of infections and death. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Today, Monday, is World Water Day. The World Meteorological Organization says that climate change is intensifying water-related disasters, threatening the lives and livelihoods of billions of people worldwide. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Climate-related hazards include increased flooding and longer-lasting droughts. Climate change also is altering rainfall patterns, affecting water availability and worsening the damage floods and drought cause worldwide. The World Meteorological Organization says increased flooding threatens to destroy water points and sanitation facilities and contaminate water sources. As a consequence, WMO spokeswoman Claire Nullis says billions of people have limited or no access to clean water and sanitation.
So 39% of the global population doesn't have access to safe drinking water. We expect this problem to be exacerbated because of socioeconomic changes, of population growth, and obviously changes in sources of water, such as glaciers.
The WMO calls glaciers the water towers of the world. It warns the melting of ice cover and glaciers is leading to more hazards and threatening the long-term water security of hundreds of millions of people. Nulla says one of the most dramatic examples of how this is playing out can be seen in Tajikistan, a country that had more than 14,500 glaciers in the 20th century.
Today, more than 1,000 of these have completely melted, and the total volume of glacier mass has decreased by one third. This, in the short term, leads to more hazards like avalanches, mud flows, flooding, what we call glacial outbursts.
Glaciers are a key source of water. In the long term, Nullis warns glacier melt will lead to increased water stress for many millions of people. She says the same phenomenon is being repeated throughout the world. The WMO says more than half of countries worldwide have no quality management systems for water. The agency is calling for more concerted action on safeguarding the world's diminishing water sources and on mitigating climate change. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in East Africa, where South Africa's Justin Harding has won the Kenyan Golf Open title. Harding produced a flawless final round of five under par 66 at Nairobi's Karen Country Club on Sunday to seal a two-shot victory over American Kurt Kitayama. The South African won the Qatar Masters in March 2019 as part of a stunning run of form that saw him claim five wins in 10 months and earned himself a place at the Masters as he broke into the top 50 in the world. The 35-year-old South African maintained his composure amid a steady challenge from American Kitayama in the just-concluded Golf Open to finish on 21 under par.
I'm glad I got one shot one better than a couple of years ago. I was bummed about that, but just happy with the way I managed my game. Executed some shots and managed to make a couple good par saves, and I couldn't lay back on 17 because I knew Kurt just bombs it. So had to go for it there, and yeah, just ultimately pleased about executing the golf shots.
In swimming news, the South Africa National Open Water Swimming Championships was concluded on Sunday at the Marina Martiniki in Jeffreys Bay with Lee McMoran and Nathan Hughes winning the 5-kilometer gold medals. 17-year-old McMoran clocked a fast 1 hour, 1 minute, 24.07 seconds to defend her 2020 title and add her name to the FINA World Junior OWS Championships qualifiers. In the men's 5 kilometer, Nathan Hughes returned a time of 58 minutes, 34.83 seconds to win gold. Tien Dijaga is the chairperson of the LOC South African National Open Water Championship.
From a training perspective, they had to revert to some other methods to keep shape, to keep their mind positive. But we are very happy that at least we can now continue with swimming and training.
The SA National Aquatic Championships will continue with the Swimming Olympic Trials, which is expected to begin from the 7th to end on the 12th of April. Rwanda National Under-20 Women Volleyball Team, alongside their Egyptian counterparts, will represent Africa in the upcoming 2021 FIVB World Championships due from July 9th through to the 18th. The tournament is expected to take place in both the Netherlands and Belgium, where only 9 African teams will be participating in the tournament. The teams are classified in different age categories. The male categories include under 21 and under 19, while the female categories will include under 18 as well as under 20. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. That's it for this Monday, March 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ray Kish Triak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington wishing you a very good week.